Welcome to Lilas. If you grew up in the 90s, you probably know what that stands for. And by default, this podcast is for you. Welcome, ladies. I say ladies plural because we have a guest on the pod today. She is none other than curator and creator of Wellness, Simply Wellness, Simply Wellman. I'm going to get it all wrong. Simply Wellman. She is a registered dietitian, and her name is Meredith Wellman from the great state of West Virginia.
Thank you guys for having me.
Yeah, we're so excited because we've, you know, talked so much in previous episodes about nutrition, diet, lifestyle change. How do we incorporate this into our own like body's mindset and then also our families? And also, what are we doing? Like, what plan, path, whatever are we following? Because there's 10,000 new ones a day. Social media hits you with another 10 more, and it's just overwhelming and confusing. And I think you can probably relate. So many people just even quit before they even get started. So,
yeah, I completely agree with that.
Yeah, I tend to be one of those people that will try anything and really give it 110% when it comes to wellness, because I do think that our mental health stems from our physical health. You know, it's all connected. And so I tend to try anything at least once. I've tried probably most of them multiple times. So I'm very curious to hear your take on some of the popular diet, I don't even want to call them diet programs, but just like wellness programs, I guess we could call them. And just see what you suggest for middle-aged women. You are not quite middle-aged yet. You are younger than about, I think probably a decade younger than Sarah and I, but you obviously know a lot about how our bodies process what we put in it. And so I'm very curious to hear your thoughts on some of those popular wellness programs.
Yeah, I'm excited to talk about it.
All right. So let's just jump right in, because I, like I said, I wanted to get your thoughts and opinions, and I have a whole list here. So I think one thing, I don't know how familiar you are with something called E2M. Yeah, it's called Eager to Motivate. Have you?
I haven't heard of that one. No, I did. Honestly, I hadn't heard of many that we discussed previously, so I did have to look some up.
Just to get an idea. And like I said, I've done pretty much all of them, and so I can fill in the gaps. But a big thing, and one thing I've noticed just in general with the programs I've done recently, is fasting is huge. That trying to stay within an 8-hour eating window. And so I'm just curious for people, you know, middle-aged women, what are your thoughts on if fasting is helpful, or could it be harmful for someone who's trying to battle hormones?
Mm-hmm. I do think there's a small population of people with any eating program we're going to talk about. There's a small population of people who it does work for. But when we're talking about the vast majority of people, so fasting by definition, it's giving yourself an 8-hour break between eating. So if we think of the word breakfast, break the fast, mm-hmm. That's the example I always use. So we are designed to give our body a break through the night. Our liver dumps and different processes happen while we are at rest. That's very important that we're not ingesting anything at that time. But, you know, with some of the topics and ways of fasting more recently, it's teetering on, all right, so now we're going and eating in an 8-hour window, and we're having to put all these calories in that time. One, can we get in enough calories and nutrition in 8 hours? Mm-hmm. And two, how's that affecting our metabolism? So it's best if we kind of think of eating as taking medicine throughout the day with a schedule. Everybody's schedule is different, but if we're packing it all in at once, then our body's having to process all that nutrition at two or one large meal, you know, one time of eating. So what that does to our metabolism over time is it can slow it down because you're making it work harder. It's not needing to go all day. So usually I don't recommend going more than 10 hours between like your dinner and your breakfast, 10 to 12 hours. 12 would be the absolute limit. So that's usually what I recommend.
That's interesting because I've never thought of it as your body having to process all of that intake within that, but you're exactly right in that you are kind of overloading the system if you're trying to get three meals in within an 8-hour window. And, you know, kind of the rage right now is high protein diets. I see a lot, I follow a lot of fitness influencers, whatever you want to call them. I'm always just interested in new information. And there's so much out there that it's hard to kind of weed through it sometimes. But it seems if you're trying to pack 8 hours worth or all the protein you need in one day in 8 hours, I could see just a lot of other issues stemming from that.
So especially with protein, so blood sugar is one thing. And then with our protein, our kidneys can only process so much protein at one sitting. So, you know, say somebody needs 110 grams of protein a day. If we're trying to eat between an 8-hour window, maybe two meals spaced out 4 hours, you're going to need to have 55 grams of protein at each time of eating. And most kidneys can't process that. If you're a very larger man, maybe, but that's going to be very hard on the kidneys. And over time, we don't want to risk our kidney health, our liver health, in spite of losing weight or on a, you know, journey to become healthier.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned something, and I love hearing you talk about this from our previous life together and everything, but the role of like blood sugar and protein, like folks just don't understand, I don't think. And I probably didn't until listening to you talk about it so many different times in different settings, how important protein is into maintaining somebody's blood sugar. So since you just kind of mentioned that, would you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. So protein, so we have three macronutrients. We have carbohydrates, protein, and fat. And they all affect our blood sugar differently. They give us a different type of energy. Mm-hmm. So carbohydrates give us a quick boost of energy, or they raise the blood sugar most quickly. So if we think of regulating our blood sugar, we're going to need something to buffer that. So protein and fat have a lot less effect on our blood sugar, fat having the absolute least effect on our blood sugar. So when we put protein and fat with our carbohydrates, and type of carbohydrates really important too, that helps to balance and kind of bring down that rise in blood sugar and give us an even curve after we eat, which is what every human should be striving for, however, whatever method you have to do to get that. But yes, we need all three of those macronutrients in different ranges just based on our health needs.
Mm-hmm. I remember, I think you and then one of our other friends, Lacey, who's also a dietitian, would talk about the importance of just understanding that, like, if you eat an apple, so many of us think that just having that apple alone is a healthy snack, but not necessarily, because we're not pairing it with a protein. So essentially we're having a naked carbohydrate that's just there to kind of give us that quick boost, that spike in blood sugar, but it's not going to be sustained. And so having that apple with like peanut butter or a slice of cheese is a better use of the energy that we're going to get from the apple, and just to kind of sustain our health long-term for, yeah, as a snack option then, right?
So food pairing is a huge thing. And I actually just published a 20-page document talking about a nutrition and weight management guide. But food pairing and balancing blood sugar is the whole topic of the nutrition education. So whether we have diabetes or not, whether it's in our family history, balance in our blood sugar is vital to everybody's health, especially if we're talking about weight management or preventing type 2 diabetes.
Mm-hmm. That was actually one of my questions too, because that's, I don't know if you've heard of the glucose goddess.
I looked it up.
Yeah, this French woman, Jessie, I'm not even going to try to pronounce her last name, but she's all about, like you're saying, like pairing your carb. She's like, eat your carb, eat whatever you're going to eat, but make sure you're pairing it with something that's going to help stabilize your blood sugar over time. And one thing I've noticed recently in a lot of these fitness groups, is you have a lot of fitness instructors starting to wear those continuous glucose monitors so that they can, you know, monitor it. And so I'm curious what your thoughts are on people without, and I want Sarah to weigh in on this too, but people without type 1 diabetes using something that is necessary for them to live or to sustain, what your thoughts are on that kind of being a current fad craze. I don't know what you want to call it.
Yeah, I have actually heard of that and seen that. I think it is a super helpful tool with individuals with diabetes. The general population wearing them, I don't know if that's necessary. I mean, if you can afford it and you're really interested, go for it. It's not going to hurt you. But, you know, a lot of people with diabetes even are struggling to get their insurance to cover one. So, but yes, you know, I work with the majority of my patients have type 2 diabetes. And when they get that continuous glucose monitor and they can see how food is affecting them, not only food, but stress, how they sleep, when they're sick, you know, all these things, their physical activity, if they're hydrated, I think it's really, really eye-opening to help them manage that disease to wear those. So it's a very helpful tool, but I wouldn't just say like, yeah, everybody go get one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I agree with what Meredith is saying too. Having worn a CGM to basically stay alive and having my son wear one too, they were invented to be life-sustaining and saving devices, not to be a fashion statement we're wearing with our Lululemon leggings while going and, you know, hitting the gym. Now that sounds kind of, I don't know, maybe a little harsh or a little negative, salty, but at the same token, Meredith's also right, is that whenever you have so many people trying to get one thing, the cost and demand and supply then gets affected. And generally speaking, you know, gym memberships, maintain a healthy lifestyle is expensive, and people that have a higher earning base or income are able to afford those things more readily, or they have better insurance than folks who are, you know, the vast majority of people with type 2 diabetes. If you look at it from a full socioeconomic kind of perspective, usually come from a lower economic standing, and they do not have access to medical care, and their insurances and often don't provide for that. And then whenever the cost goes up, like what we're seeing with some of those weight loss drugs that have come out, then it does make it harder for people who actually have medical conditions in order to have access to it. So unless you are using this as a tool for disease prevention, like trying to prevent type 2 diabetes, or you are a diabetic of any type, then I would not endorse you using that. And also, what are you really going to find? Because by definition, your blood sugar really shouldn't be having that much variance if you're not a diabetic. So you're just using that to look cute.
It's true.
Sorry.
Yeah. Or to just understand how different foods affect your body. But I mean, the information's already out there, right? We know that if you eat a banana, that your blood sugar is going to spike like that. Like you're saying, it's more about pairing it with something like a protein or, you know, something to help stabilize that. So then are you a fan of the apple cider vinegar, like sort of mocktail before you eat a high carb meal?
Me or Sarah?
You.
I've never done it. I haven't researched much about it. I've gotten lots of questions about it.
I bet.
I think it's something, it's not going to hurt, but would I expect grain results? No.
Okay. Interesting. I always like to, you know, because like I said, I've tried a lot of these things, and I'm just curious what somebody that's actually, you know, licensed to discuss these things, what you would say about them. I did something here in Charleston it's probably been about 2 years ago, but did something called a gut reset, where basically you were really focused on more of a plant forward diet. I wouldn't say it was 100% plant-based, but it was plant forward and like eating the rainbow and really trying to improve your gut health overall. We did like an in-body scan at the beginning, and at the end, I think I lost like 5% like visceral fat. I mean, it was substantial for me. And I, you know, I've always been more of like just trying to maintain my weight. I'm not constantly trying to lose weight, but I am trying to maintain it as I get older. And so it did prove to be, I thought, a very good program overall. I could pretty much eat whatever I wanted. I like a lot of sweet potatoes and rice and quinoa and that kind of stuff. And it lended itself to those types of things. But I have two family members who are like meat. They could eat steak, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And so I struggled meshing the two together. So what are your thoughts on gut reset, gut health? Is that kind of your favorite of the diet plans at this point?
Very important. So plant nutrition is important for no matter what we're trying to achieve with our health. Plants have fiber, which helps our gut health tremendously. Plants have a ton of vitamins and minerals that you can kind of think of as, you know, going in and just making sure everything's functioning right at a cellular level in our body. And then plants also have a specific nutrient called phytonutrients, which there's all kinds of compounds in these plants, and they work together and they almost act like medicine to truly heal our body. Mm-hmm. So it's not going to work like a prescription pill as quickly, but over time, you know, plants really can kind of go in and heal our body from the inside out. So any diet that's increasing fruits and vegetables is going to give you some health benefits. But just like you said, you know, meshing that to your family's routine can be kind of hard if you're following something that's maybe more strict or has a timeline to it. It's not as applicable to your whole life. So, you know, just overall trying to increase fruits and vegetables and maybe also having some animal foods, dairy foods, because another side of our gut health is going to be what were you eliminating during that time? So you increased fruits and vegetables and all your other plant foods, grains, nuts and seeds, beans, but you also probably were decreasing processed foods, added sugars, hydrogenated oils. And so, you know, which one had the biggest effect? They probably both did.
Yeah, sometimes I think it's hard to tell, but you're exactly right. You had to eliminate, you know, sugar, processed sugar. You could eat like dates and things like that that have natural sugar in them, but again, when you're trying, like I, you know, I've kind of ventured into this while just sort of like make up my own sort of like wellness program and take a little bit from each of the things that I've tried over the years. But then, you know, it's much easier to follow sort of like a prescriptive program that somebody, it's very, you know, it's like, I can't have this, or I shouldn't, you know, eat this in moderation. You can always have these things. And so sometimes it's easier if it's just sort of black and white. At least for somebody like me, I'm not a chef by any means. I can throw three ingredients in a bowl and make it happen. But, you know, it is difficult. The older I get, the less I want to diet, you know, the less I want to restrict myself. But I also have this desire to still maintain my current fitness level. So it's like, how do you meet those needs?
Yeah. And I think what you said, just trying to mesh together something from all of these plans is probably going to be your best bet, because, you know, some of those diets that you mentioned, I did look up and a lot of them didn't have credibility. So there's probably a million diets out there, more than that. I don't know. So a lot of them were created because somebody did something and it worked for them. And it did work, but there's no science background to say, okay, this is going to work for this whole population. So they sell it and someone tries it and it works short term. But for that individual, maybe they have a lot of other barriers or health factors that just, you can't sustain that program. So kind of what you're going to see in a lot of these diets is there's an increase in plant intake. There's no denying that we need plants in our diet. More fruits and vegetables, nuts and seeds, whole grains versus refined. We need protein wherever that's coming from. So if you're following like a strict vegan diet, you're going to be pairing your plant proteins together. If you're someone like my husband, or it sounds like your husband too, we're getting that meat in. And then we also need that heart healthy omega-3 fat. So maybe we're subbing in some fish a couple times a week instead of that steak, or the types of oils that we're using. snacking on nuts and seeds with our fruit to get in some plant fat, heart healthy fat. Mm-hmm. So overall, that's what you're going to be finding in all these diets. And then it's up to the individual to say what amount you need of each, what feels best, your routine with your family. That's a huge part of it.
Yeah.
I would say also dairy is often eliminated in these plans. And so where do you stand on dairy?
We're a dairy family in this house. Dairy. So I guess the reason it's eliminated on a lot of plans is because a lot of people are lactose intolerant. If that's the case, then yes, you need to eliminate or reduce your dairy intake and replacing that with a good alternative, a good dairy alternative. Other than that, I wouldn't say there's a reason. An allergy would be a reason to decrease it. But dairy's been around a long time. You know, there's conflict over the source of the dairy, the quality of the dairy. But I don't know, in my mind, milk is milk. So as long as we're not getting chocolate milk, strawberry milk, you know, all right. these different things, if you don't have any issues, it should be fine to consume.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think one thing that is so important, and if this is where I would actually, if I was back in the days where I was giving people advice, this is where I would steer people towards something. Instead of getting acute CGM, which is going to cost you a good amount of money, I think that there's much more value in sitting down with a registered dietitian and talking with them and getting a health plan developed that is actually based on your individual needs, maybe even looking at some labs that have been drawn and what your current weight, your BMI, talking about what your goals are instead of using the next cool gadget that comes out in order to try to figure this stuff out on your own. Because it is a true profession based on science and evidence. And whenever you have that individual that, like Meredith, that you can sit down with and talk with and work with, then you really do get a good understanding of not just like these different metabolic processes and how food kind of breaks down, but what works best for you and then how you can incorporate this into your family's lifestyle too. And I've watched Meredith do this, which is the cool part, is that we used to work in like an integrated care setting. And so it would be her, myself, and then we had a nurse practitioner. And we would all three work together with a singular patient on, you know, how do we enact the types of behaviors that are needed in order to cultivate whatever kind of change that you're making in your life and doing it long term. Bria, who is our nurse practitioner, would order the lab. She would do a lot of the triage process. She would help to adjust medications and really talk about the importance from a medical standpoint of what we're doing. And then Meredith would come up with these beautiful individualized plans based upon a person's socioeconomic status. Are they the main caregiver for the family cooking all the meals? You know, what are their body's actual needs? And then how does this kind of transcend? Is that, I mean, in my mind, that's what I would recommend would be like the best approach to things. Where do you stand on this, Meredith?
Obviously, I would recommend services. Right. But yeah, so that's kind of what I was getting around to with the previous topic was just, there's all these plans out there, but we are all so different, you know, our health, not only that, but just a lot of the conversations in my follow-up appointments are, what are your barriers? And just kind of figuring out like, why can't you follow this plan? Or what's a barrier between you and consuming this nutritious food? So obviously we address education, but a lot of times it's maybe connecting them. Do you have the resources to buy these foods, to get to these foods? You know, I started a program with the food bank. I started seeing pediatric patients and I was finding that these kids can't drive themselves to the store. They don't have money, mm-hmm. But they didn't have healthy food in the house. So that was a huge barrier. So I created a program with the food bank where these kids once a month can receive a box of nutritious foods. They drop them off or they can go pick them up, their families. And so that was a way to overcome that barrier. So you don't have the food, now you do. And they can mm-hmm. do that now. I've seen so many patients who don't have blenders, and that's just something that naively, or, you know, it's a privilege to not be able to think like that, but, you know, I'm telling them to make smoothies and they don't have a blender. So let's get them a blender so they can put some fruits and vegetables in a smoothie from that box from the food bank. Yes, like you said, you know, meshing together the whole family's needs. You're not just cooking for yourself. Most people aren't. So we got to kind of figure out, okay, how can I prepare something that's good for the whole family? Mm-hmm. So those are all barriers that aren't even talking about health history and labs and your health factors that are a barrier. So it's very complex.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And a lot of times I think, well, I mean, it obviously starts with the parents and you're setting the example for your kids, right? In how we eat and how we, you know, just like having family dinners together that we sit and we chew our food and we don't just stare at a screen and inhale our meal. And so there's so many things that we do behaviorally to teach our kids how to be, or at least try to pass on the most valuable information that we can in regards to our health. But it is interesting to me. One thing I've noticed, so, I mean, Sarah knows this, I have two kids. At both, I would say, healthy weights, right? They'll eat pretty much anything I put in front of them for the most part. My daughter has an aversion to vegetables that I'm pretty sure she picked up from my mother, but she's got her things that she likes, and that's okay because I can make peas every, you know, once a week or whatever. But, you know, I've noticed in a lot of our friend groups, you know, I have friends whose kids have a lot of food aversions. They just won't eat anything besides like a trail mix or like a granola bar. You know, they're very restrictive in their eating. And my husband and I sort of laugh. I mean, we had one friend one time, I watched them like feed their, like actually like pick up the spoon and like feed their child. And that's not an issue in our house. Like we have to be like, you've had enough. Let's give our belly a rest. And then we'll come back if you're hungry 20 minutes from now. And so we often laugh sort of jokingly, but we're like, where did we go wrong? Like we have to stop our kids from eating most of the time. And I just seems like the vast majority is trying to get their kids to eat. So like, where do you fall on healthy eating habits for kids, or maybe like, do you have any suggestions for how to prepare our kids for healthy eating habits?
I mean, I think modeling is the number one thing, mm-hmm. because as long as we're setting that tone, that's about all the control we have. You know, mm-hmm. it's good to eat something if they have an aversion to it. But setting the tone, modeling that good behavior, getting that education yourself so you have a good understanding, because a lot of people unknowingly pass on misinformation about food to their kids. And then the kids grow up, you know, believing the misinformation, and then they got to handle that themselves. So I think educating yourself as a parent and then kind of working on yourself and then modeling that behavior to your kids is the number one thing. As far as the aversions go, and some kids not eating and some kids, you know, having to walk away from the table, a lot of kids do have aversions, and maybe it stems from a disorder or something that is very common is just the age of the child. So small kids have a lot more taste buds than adults. We lose taste buds as we age. So it truly might taste different to them. You know, I'm a dietitian. I don't think I ate Brussels sprouts till I was in high school. So it's okay. I wasn't eating them when I was three and I still created habits. But that's one thing, is just that foods taste different to children. So we need to acknowledge that. And then the next thing would be, there's something called food JAGs, mostly in the toddler age, but they do kind of get focused on something and only eat that for a little bit. And then next week, maybe they're eating something completely different and just completely do not like what they ate the week before. So just working with that. And so with my pediatric patients and with my son, I think offering them a wide variety is huge, along with that modeling behavior, because then we know that we're giving them something that they will eat, that they like, and then we're also exposing them to new foods. So we can't only give them that food that they like, because then that kind of makes that food JAG worse if they think, okay, this is the only thing I need to eat. So we need to be exposing them to those new foods, maybe they don't touch it, but it's on their plate and it's part of their meal. They know a meal is more than one food.
That's such a good idea. Just that whole notion of just allow it, like, I didn't realize that we lose taste buds. So that was news to me, but that something could actually be tasting different to them when we're like, no, this is really good. And they're like, actually, it's not, Mom. Yeah. It's too salty or whatever, you know, the issue is. But just that whole idea of just letting them choose. And if they choose not to like it this week, hey, there's always next week, because we know how young children change their mind from week to week. They loved chicken parm last week. This week, not so much.
And I think, so my son is almost three, and it is true that they just want to be independent. And it's almost with anything, with food or what they're wearing, brushing their teeth, the more that you push it, I mean, at some point you got to make sure they're eating and brushing their teeth, but the more that I push something, it's pushing him away from it. So you kind of just got to have a few boundaries in place, and then you're offering them their plate. What they eat, they eat. In a few hours, we'll have a snack. If they didn't eat enough, we're going to offer them some new foods. One thing that they like, a couple nutritious foods. That's my method.
Keep it moving. Keep it moving. Yeah, I've struggled some with my kids in highly processed foods, and I've had to just like let it go. One thing that I have tried to do with them, though, is my son can read. My daughter's in kindergarten, but my son, I'm like, all right, let's read what's on the back of that package. And if you still want to eat it after we talk about what all these things are, cool, you can have it. And that seems to help them make some better decisions, especially my older son. But now they will also say, like, around their friends, they're like, oh, did you know that has, you know, red 40 in it or whatever? And I'm like, well, you know, like, to each their own, like, let them make their own choices.
It's really hard. It is. And there's so much information these days. And even as a dietitian, you know, I'll get on Instagram or something and somebody posts something that makes me feel like the decision I'm making isn't good. You know, I think we're just constantly like comparing ourselves to what other people are doing. But as far as processed foods go, you know, a little bit is okay. So it's what we're doing most of the time that's making up our health. And going into Sarah's field of work, you know, the mental side of eating is huge. So we don't want to create disordered eating. We don't want to, you know, make them feel like something's forbidden because it's not nutritious. So back to that plate method, you know, maybe they want Lucky Charms. So we put a little bit of Lucky Charms in a bowl, but then we also give them a banana and berries and they have their milk. So they're not only having that processed food, maybe they have a little bit of red dye in there, but if there's not any health concerns, a little bit of red dye, typically it's going to be not going to cause much harm. But kids, I'm sure you guys ate more processed foods when you were younger. And then as you get older, you realize those don't make me feel very good. And I think that's the best way to handle it, is kind of just teaching kids to learn or just keep understanding that the way that they feel and eating with their body, with their mind, to kind of guide them for their choices, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think you do a great job too, on your social media pages, the Simply Wellman, of demonstrating what you're talking about right now. So you will be sitting there cooking, and they, both you and Jen have Jacks, by the way. You guys have twin Jacks. But your little Jack will be sitting there just all in, like head to toe, covered in flour, gooey hands. But he's also taking part in that. And Jen, I see you do that too with Jolie, especially with the baking stuff. Like, you guys really do incorporate your kids into this whole process of things. And I just feel like that's a really cool tool that you're using in that experience of touch, taste, smell, you know, all of it, the prep, the work, the effort, the reward that kind of comes from it. How would you recommend parents to do that? Because I think that sometimes we get in these mindsets where we're just too busy. We're running to the next game. We've got our own work schedules, our own life schedules. How can we be better at incorporating our kids into nutrition, I guess?
Yeah. And I even struggle with that too, because sometimes it just is like, all right, I have 15 minutes. If you're helping me, it's going to take 45 minutes. So, when you have the time, really involve them. If you have a Saturday afternoon with no plans, you know, get them as involved as you can. If it's a quick weeknight meal, maybe you're keeping it simple and just letting them make a choice for the meal. So are we going to have carrots? Or are we going to have broccoli as our vegetable for the dinner? And you're letting them pick between the two. But yes, any way you can involve a kid, not only are you teaching them the life skills that they need as they grow up to cook and understand nutrition and food, but also it's back to that independence thing. You know, if they're putting their hands in it and feeling it, they're becoming exposed to it and they feel like they're part of the process. So they're more likely to taste it, not always, but more likely to taste it if they've had some part in it and they feel proud of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've noticed that I just started doing making sourdough, like in the spring, probably like May. I've probably made like 50 loaves now, but my kids are so into it. I mean, we go through a loaf a day at this point because they just devour it. And I took some out to our friend's house this weekend and kind of got all the kids involved, and the control freak in me freaked out a little bit because all these hands, and I was like, I don't know if this is going to work out and I need this bread to work out. We're all eating it all weekend. And it worked out beautifully. And the kids, again, all of them like couldn't get enough of it. And so it just shows like the power of like involving kids and how much more they're going to want to try the whatever it is.
Yeah. And I will reiterate, it's just sometimes it is hard, and I'm not discrediting that. But yeah, as often as you can get them involved, do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we grew up, I mean, like I said, you're probably about 10 years, at least 10 years younger than us. But during, like when we were teenagers, there was a lot of focus and on body, you know, body types. And so I think now having a young daughter, a 5-year-old, I'm very conscious about the way I talk about our bodies and our food and our body types. And, you know, she sees me work out most days. And so it is this like balance of almost trying to take care of yourself to also overcome the way that we were sort of trained in our teenage years, but also not passing those detrimental behaviors on to the next generation, because it's just so different than it was when we were kids. Would you say the same for you?
Yes, 100%. And I feel like that is the most important work, what you're talking about and what you're doing, because you're creating the way that they're thinking about their body for the rest of their life. And once again, Sarah's field, but getting that misinformation or looking at your body in a different way can create way worse health concerns for an individual, especially a young girl, than maybe them being 5 pounds overweight. So just the way that we talk about ourselves, parenting is very humbling.
Ain't it though?
Constantly having to model what we believe is going to be most helpful for our kids and just helping them to have a better future and health and body image. Yeah.
Yeah. I just read Britney Spears' book and she talked, I mean, I would say she was like the body we always compared our body to, right? When we were teenagers, you know, she ripped up abs. She looked amazing, great legs, all the things, right? And then in her book, she talks about kind of like the regimen that she was on and the foods that she was allowed to eat. And it actually like made me angry reading it, because here you had this entire generation of young girls comparing themselves and trying to look like her when she was, you know, mistreating her body, not because she wanted to, but because she was forced to, essentially. And so it was really... I don't know. I had a lot of emotions reading that, because I just remember being that young, you know, 15, 16 year old girl comparing my body to hers. And then, you know, had we known back then, oh, well, she only eats like, you know, 800 calories a day or whatever it was like, well, no wonder none of us had ripped up abs and dancer legs. Like, well, some people did, but I didn't.
Realistic and unhealthy. And as a young exactly. girl, you don't have the brain capacity to understand that. So one of the most proud moments I've had as a dietitian. So I started seeing pediatric patients probably about a year ago. And some of these kids are awesome, you know, and a little girl sat down in the chair in my office and she said, she gave me this little spiel and she said, I just want to be healthier. She said, I don't care about my weight. I just want to be healthier. Like she was getting bullied at school and the consult was for weight. But I was just like, that is huge to hear a little girl say that. Just, you know, if we start that young and focus on becoming healthier, eating more nutritiously, instead of just weight, you know, eating an 800 calorie diet, not paying attention to health, that's huge. That's going to change the rest of her life. So
That's kind of half the battle is just getting to that mindset of being healthy, not trying to look a certain way.
Yeah.
Gosh, yeah. And then just having the tools and the access to the tools that you need in order to make it happen, I think is just, that's really critical. I get big on my high horse of having dietitians as part of a health plan.
We kind of get pushed to the, we get pushed to the basement, pushed to the closets in healthcare, but everybody eats. So I'm not saying everybody has huge complex eating plans that we need to work through, but everybody eats. So everybody can benefit from even just a one-time consult and learning the basics of nutrition education. And then you can take that however you need to. So that really was one of the main reasons I created that weight management nutrition guide that I just put on my website, because sometimes I felt like a broken record in my office, just the basics, you know, repeating to somebody who doesn't have a complex history, just being able to share the basics of nutrition. $13. It's not super expensive. For more people just to be able to at least read that and give them something to go off of and apply it to their lifestyles and put it into their homes.
I love that. And I can relate to that. I think that's why we started this podcast. We started to feel like a broken record talking about the same things. And it's like, well, hey, why don't we just put it on one platform that everybody can access?
I feel like that's a mom mindset. Like after becoming a mom, you become so efficient in the way that you do things. Like, instead of telling this to 60 people, how about I just create this document where everybody can read it?
Yeah, seriously. Well, I'm glad you shared that with us, and especially just, you know, the importance of focusing on your own health. The food that we are putting into our bodies is medicine. I mean, you said that, and I just think we just don't even think of it that way. I just think that it's almost like we have kids and we don't have this like manual that like teaches us how to raise them. And that's probably somewhat of an issue, but then we don't have like one that talks about like eating and food either. We just do it and think that, hey, whatever it is okay, even though it's clearly not. And another point you made is by design, our body's supposed to have certain things. And it wasn't supposed to have some of the things that we're putting into it now because it's all manufactured and it's false. And so really like how Jen was having her kids do, take a look at those labels. You know, if you can't pronounce a word or don't know what it is, I don't tend to put those things in my body. You know, it just doesn't seem right.
Less frequent foods and then putting those more nutritious foods in most of the time.
Yeah. I think that's been a game changer for me. Cause again, like I can get a little controlling over certain things because right. We want what's best for our kids. And we're like, no, I'm going to show you how you eat. And it's like, I had to let go of that a little bit and say, you know what, we're going to talk about what all these things mean. Cause we can't even pronounce half these words, but we're going to look them up and then we're going to talk about what it is. And I'm laughing because there was one, I forget what it is now, but it is, they make it, I think it's natural flavors that's in like everything. And I think we read that it comes from the anal glands of animals. Yeah. And that the reaction that I got from my children, and my daughter looked at me just straight face and she goes, well, can we get it without butt juice?
No, like, she didn't.
I mean, but what that told me is like, she gets the concept, right? She understands that they're making this from this and they're putting it in this food. Maybe I don't want to eat that after all.
That's educational, you know, so she can make informed decisions for herself instead of relying on, as she gets older, not relying on you to make those decisions for her. So once again, education is so important.
So important. Before I forget, because I want to make sure I ask you, have you ever heard of blender bombs?
I did look it up. Okay. So are they, you make a, tell me what they are.
So it's a Charleston base. There's a girl here in Charleston that came up with these little blender bombs. So basically it's like chia seeds. It's like a bunch of all of these like amino acids. Like she puts them in these little like bombs basically, and you just drop them in your smoothie. Okay. And I think it helps sort of like regulate that sugar, your blood glucose, whatever. Because most of the time we're putting a lot of like fruits, you know, berries, banana, that kind of stuff in our smoothie. And so that sort of helps keep you fuller longer, but also gives you some of those necessary like vitamins and minerals that our bodies need.
Yeah. I couldn't figure out if you put them in a smoothie or if you just ate them by themselves, but I looked it up. That's very nutritional, all the ingredients in there. As far as the nutrition panel went, it was high in fiber. It had adequate fat. The only thing it was missing was enough protein if you're having it for a meal. So whatever you're using in your smoothie would then need to include more protein. So whether you're putting like a protein drink or milk, Greek yogurt, that would give you the protein needs to cover it.
Okay. Yeah, I'm a big blender bomb fan. I invested in that company, and it's just here in Charleston that you can get them anywhere. And she would say you can eat them anywhere. You know,
they remind me of those like energy balls that people make.
Mm-hmm.
Our ingredients is.
Yeah, it is interesting how many fitness people sort of. I mean, I've joined lots of gyms over the years, and they sort of give you information as though they specialize in nutrition. So it's always interesting then to hear someone who actually has specialized in nutrition, their suggestions, because there's so many, like we said, there's just so much information out there, and it's sometimes hard to weed through who knows best and who's keeping up with current research. We know that science is changing, and I love on your website, it's like part science, part soul. And I was like, ooh, that's good. Because that is food, right? It's part science.
We're not robots. We can't just, you know, eat like a robot. Maybe a few people can, but most people can't. So we got to put it all together. And with all those plans too, you know, so my whole point, you know, the name of my website is Simply Wellman. And that is my whole point, is to make it simple, to make wellness and nutrition simple, because that's the main reason I went into dietetics, because I was so confused by nutrition, as many young women are. You know, what am I supposed to be eating? You know, you hear something one day, you don't hear something the next, and you can't just avoid food. You have to eat. It's not like, okay, I'm not going to wear shoes today. No, you need to choose what you're having for breakfast today. And after learning this complex, huge idea of nutrition and all the, you know, the science behind it, to be able to put it in a very simple way, it's just that we are hugely making nutrition confusing and focusing on one thing when nutrition is a lot of things. You know, we kind of get hyper-focused on one thing like protein when it needs to be looked at. Kind of take a step back and look at the big picture. What are the basics? What can we focus on? Mm-hmm. We're human. So, you know, the needs haven't really changed. We just have a lot more information now to sift through.
Yeah.
It's good, but sometimes it can just get overwhelming.
Yeah. And I think just lastly, and correct me if I'm wrong, but for someone to call themselves a nutritionist, I could call myself a nutritionist because it's an unregulated term that does not require a license or education. A dietitian has an education and a license and educational requirements that they have to meet in order to maintain the ability to practice. Is that correct?
So a nutritionist, I believe there's like a certificate online. You can mm-hmm. complete it. Yeah. You can put nutritionist in your Instagram bio and nobody's going to question it. But a dietitian is a regulated term. We're board certified, continuing education hours. And so you can be called a registered dietitian, or it can be an RDN, registered dietitian nutritionist. And so when people are looking up information online, like when you gave me those diets, that's the first thing I did was look at who created this diet, what's their background, what's their education, do they have credibility to be talking about this? And if they don't, then most of the time you can just click X and go look up something else. So always check for credibility. Does somebody have the credibility to be speaking about this in a way that they are, or promoting the things that they are? So it's one thing if you're just talking about, hey, this works for me. It's another thing if you're promoting it and selling it to people to do.
Yeah. The gut reset that I did, it was led by a registered dietitian. And so I felt like I learned a ton. She gave us almost like a workbook of information. Yeah. And so there was like the science behind it, which I found obviously very interesting. And it was probably the most sustainable of all of the programs that I've tried. Just trying to get my family on board. It was a little bit more difficult, but I think I'm going to just after talking to you today, try to get back to some of those basic parts of that plan. Which also I'm curious to know, is there any supplements or anything that you take on a daily basis, like vitamin D or anything? We're moving into winter months. Is there anything that you feel like most people benefit from?
So vitamin D is huge. The only two supplements that I recommend to most individuals is vitamin D and omega-3. Just because with typical diet these days, vitamin D is hard to get in food anyway. And then most people are working indoors all day. We're not building up that vitamin D store in our body. So most people can benefit from a supplement. Very few reasons to have negative side effects with that. And then omega-3 is an anti-inflammatory fat, heart healthy fat. Fish oil would be the supplement, just because not many people are eating the fish that we're supposed to be eating. So those are two supplements that I recommend more widely. And then for women especially, I think taking a prenatal is very, it just helps to give you a cushion to make sure that you're not deficient in certain nutrients. So there's a lot of reasons that a woman can be deficient in certain micronutrients. And just having that cushion helps to make sure that we're covering more of a base. And then you want to make sure you're eating a good diet too, but can just help to supplement.
Yeah. Very good. All right. So I want to make sure that I covered all my questions, because this is my chance, right? Now that I've got you on here. I think we hit them all. If we want, you said you've got the weight management guide. You can find that at simplywellman.com. Mm-hmm. And I checked out your Instagram yesterday. I love the aesthetic. You just have, it's just very pretty. I liked all of it. And so
design that. I'm not very techie at all. So that goes to her.
So that was also Simply Wellman. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. At Simply Wellman is my Instagram.
And what were the t-shirts you were talking about you designed to help raise money?
Yes. On my website too, under the shop tab, I have t-shirts, some home items for sale. And there's a Made for This is the name of the shirt. There's toddler, youth, and adult t-shirts that say Made for This on it. And that is, I'm raising money for a meal train for NICU parents. So all the money will go towards our local NICU at Cabell Huntington Hospital to give parents their $25 food gift cards.
So awesome.
100% of the profits from those shirts will go towards that.
That's awesome. So definitely check out simplywellman.com. I think I got it right that time. Meredith, thank you so much for coming on and answering all of our questions. It is, it's been informative. It has been validating, all the things that we try to do on this podcast, which is really just spread science-based information that is applicable to everyday life for all of us that are in the rat race of life right now. Which you know well, being a working mother. So thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it.
Loving me. I really appreciate you guys asking me.
Yeah, totally love it, Meredith. Anytime we get the chance to get together and chat about this stuff, it always warms my heart because you have such a positive vibe. And it, like Jen said, everything you do is just beautiful. And I think the way that I've seen you communicate with patients and just other people about it, and then how you practically walk the walk, is just really, really cool. And I think that's important for people to see too, is someone actually doing the work.
I have one more real quick question, because this just popped in my head. is, if someone is seeking to see a registered dietitian, is that typically covered by insurance?
No. So diabetes is usually covered by most insurance plans. Medicare is the most strict with covering dietitian services. No preventable services are covered, only if you have diabetes or kidney disease. Other insurance plans are a little bit more flexible. Before patients come and see me, I ask to run a prior authorization, which tells if the visit is covered based on their diagnosis. But a referral has to be in place and it has to be deemed medically necessary to see a dietitian. So, I would just, if somebody is interested in it, I would check into their insurance, have a prior authorization done, for a dietitian visit. And then if it's not, they can get that guide. That would be a good start.
All right. Okay, great. Thank you for answering that. I've never considered that, but after today I was like, ooh.
Yes, I do wish more preventable services were covered. So maybe in the future, if we could prevent those things from happening, it would be great. But yeah, if you have diabetes or kidney disease, it's likely to be covered 100%. Otherwise, just based on your diagnosis, get it checked out and maybe it'll be covered.
Okay. So it's worth a shot, even if, you know, even if you think it's not, go ahead and try that prior authorization just to see.
For most things, it is covered by other insurances than Medicare, like, you know, just obesity or an abnormal blood sugar, PCOS, high cholesterol.
So okay. There's
other things that I'll see.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Any mental health issues that you can think of that's typically covered?
Oh, me?
Yeah, either one.
All of them are. No, we always run a pre-auth too. Whenever I was in practice, just to make sure that a person's insurance would cover it. But generally speaking, thanks to advocacy and changes, I could see anybody and it would be covered under insurance, all panels. But in our world too, we could also be seen privately. Is that an option in dietetics? So can you see a person privately?
Yes. Just not many people opt for that option. I actually offer a reduced rate. It's as low as I can get it where I practice, a reduced rate private pay option for when insurance doesn't cover. Mm-hmm. It's out to $66 for a 30-minute visit. So if it's not covered, I do offer that to the person. Sometimes that's just not an option for people. So
okay. Well, then definitely check out the guide. Start there. And then if you live in West Virginia, definitely look up Meredith Wellman. I'm sure there's some other lovely registered dietitians. I don't know if our friend Lacey still practices, but there are plenty of options out there. So again, thank you so much. we've so enjoyed this time. Until next week, y'all. Lilas.
We're out. Hey, and by the way, this is just a programming note. We are going to take a little bit of a break because we have just finished up officially season 2.
What?
Just got to throw that out there. So we're going to take a week hiatus, but we offer all of our previous episodes to kind of go back and listen to during that time so you can catch up on it. And then send us your thoughts, your ideas, your questions, topics that you want to hear us talk about for season 3. Because we've got some ideas and, you know, our planning, how well that works out most of the time. But we really want to incorporate all of the good suggestions that you guys have into this. So share them with us. So thank you all so much.